您现在收听的是《地球好辣
Super Hot》。
Hello， 大家好，我是玉萍。
James，
你不要开玩笑。
OK， 我们今天有一个非常特别的来宾，然后说不定之后会变成我们那个一段时间内的 in house 的成员，叫做再次全名啊、
哦、，James Pound。
OK， James 是我们在协会这几个月的一个合作伙伴，我都这样对外宣传。然后因为那个六月的时候他写了一封文情并茂的 email 来，然后问我们协会说可不可以跟他一起合作他的在雪梨大学的论文，不是专题，研究生专题，是可以自己找组织的，然后他找上了我们。所以等一下呢聊聊为什么一个澳洲的研究生会对台湾的超级迷你微小的组织如我们产生这么大的兴趣，想要这四个月来我们的办公室跟我们一起生活一起工作这样。好，那今天这个时间非常特别，以下呢我会转成英文访问的方式，然后请大家就是不要对我的英文太苛责，对，因为我们也不好意思请 James 反过来，下次也许我们考虑就是 challenge James 全中文这样。OK， so first question is why are you here?
Why am I? It's a good question. I had a bit of a history of studying and researching Taiwan sustainability challenges, and I always knew that.With my master's program, that I was going to do my final research project here in Taiwan as a way of almost giving back to the lifestyle I had while I was living here during COVID. That's the short version. The longer version would be something like I originally came to Taiwan at the start of COVID, as in, I was the last flight to land in Taiwan when the border closed.
Yeah, because the Australian border was so strict, right?
It was strict earlier than Taiwan's.
Okay.
So I was able to leave Australia. But when I landed in Taiwan...
You were locked.
Yeah, they said, the border closed while you were in the air. You can come inside, but you need a quarantine. And so when I got out of Taiwan Airport, I saw...the scheduled flights, cancelled. Wow. Really felt like I was the last flight into Taiwan. I was very lucky that I was able to get in.
Very lucky to come to a safe land.
Yeah. You know, at the time, it was around 20 cases per day, but at the end of my quarantine, I think it was the first day of 300 days in a row of zero COVID, so no. It was very fortunate. It was during this time where I had quite a lot of free time.A friend sent me a link to a course, a diploma in sustainable living, which was actually online with the University of Tasmania. And a lot of the assignments said, you know, choose the country you live in, choose the city you live in, write a report about this. And so I started to get a bit curious. I thought, if I'm living here, let's find out what the sustainable...development, climate, or the environment is like here. And so that was a year-long online course, and I think 90% of my projects had the title Taipei or Taiwan.
But you live in Taichung, I thought you would be.
Actually, the first 12 months, 18 months, I was living in Taipei. It was after I finished that diploma, and a few months later, I moved to Taichung.
So you probably know more than we do about Taipei sustainable issues. How do you, in general, feel like Taipei is doing? Oh, through your study.
So the study at that time, it was looking at, it's a bit more on the science side, actually. So looking at things like urban heat island, any trends in changing climates. So is it getting...wetter or is it getting hotter or is it more typhoons coming or less typhoons coming? And I I think the answer that I came to was that there wasn't enough data. I think I could only find enough data consistently for things like typhoons and rainfall patterns for 10 years, which is a bit hard to extrapolate.
Yeah.
Changing climate.
Yeah, on that, but it's on enough to make you feel like constantly curious about the whole thing.
Constantly curious. And then around that time was also when President Tsai Ing-wen announced the net zero target of 2050 without any roadmap to do so. And I found it very interesting because that was when I saw it more in the news. People were talking about it, people were thinking how we can do this.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of led to me thinking more about it. Like, what are the barriers, what are the strengths that Taiwan has to actually tackle this challenge? And so then when I started my master's in Sydney, I continued this this line of inquiry.
How does it come, because it comes from such a big country compared to Taiwan, how does it feel living here in Taiwan and then back in Australia?
I thought that when I went back to Australia, the car was going to be very freeing. Because in Taiwan, there's no really need to drive a car. It's so convenient to get around in any form of transportation. But I thought, oh, being in a car, I can turn the music up really loud and have a sort of like a party by yourself when you're driving to friends' houses. But after maybe the first day of then sitting in traffic or driving for an hour to get to a friend's house, I thought, I kind of miss just like sitting on the train for 20 minutes and getting anywhere. So it was actually more of a shock going back than coming here in terms of transport, in terms of getting around.
Bump into any interesting things during your stay in Taiwan?
I think not that I personally found, I think I adapt quite well to different cultures, but the most interesting thing was talking to friends and meeting new people, and the topic of education usually comes up.
Because you are a teacher? Or?
Yeah, that seems to be the pathway. It's like, oh, what do you do here? You teach English. Oh, my English teacher was from America. My English teacher was from... And then we would talk about, oh, so what did you do in high school? What, did you play any sports? Did you play any music? And they said,
no.
No, it says we need to do a sport, but we just go to the library and study. Oh, it says we need to play music at this time on a Thursday, but you know, that's 2 hours, we can go to the library.
But supposedly your students are not very old, right? They are like, still they live in this kind of...
This was more of the friends that I met along the way, so my age, mid-20s. The students that I was teaching were as young as 4 years old, up to about 11. And it was mainly those 10 and 11-year-olds who were just on the verge of going into middle school or high school. That you could see the stress level starting to build a bit. For the most part, I think the students that I taught could still run around and play music and have a few other extra activities before they had to worry about tests.
But it's during the COVID time. So do you do it mostly online with the students?
Teaching.
There
were times during the two big surges. Well, the first surge was, in hindsight, not very big. 700 cases in one day. But it was enough to...
It's a first wave.
The first wave. Yeah. Enough to drive everyone inside. And that was a big adjustment because I was still doing the diploma of sustainable living. And I had to adjust to going online to teach, which immediately doubled my working hours.
Why?
By having to produce content that was visually engaging to do through PowerPoints and slideshows on Zoom. Okay, I know what it's like to learn online. I'm in my mid-20s. I get bored after 20 minutes. How can I stop 5-year-olds and 8-year-olds from being bored?
Yeah.
So the shift wasn't hard, but it was the time the amount of time that was required to do so. I wasn't just going to turn up for Zoom, load a flash game on an internet and kind of lose control of the class. I still was, even though education, it's not something that I'm going to go into teaching kids long term, but I still care about the quality of education that they get because it's under my responsibility.
It's how many students you normally have?
At that time, it was around 3 or 4. Classes were small, which actually makes it quite difficult. You can't divide them up into teams to play games, and then when you're online, you can't really lecture either because English is their second language. They're 6 years old, 7 years old. They are at home, surrounded by all of their toys and distractions. The last thing they want to do is speak to me for 2 hours, so...
2 hours?
2 hour classes.
Very
demanding. Yeah. Now, first time here, it was actually my second time here, but it was around education. Mm. At all levels, from cram schools and junior school, junior high school, high school, university. It's all quite different to what happens in Australia.
Mm. And do you feel we kind of put so much emphasis on education and work and that kind of hardworking, I don't know, degrees and things like that compared to Australian?
I don't necessarily say it's a focus on education, a focus on testing and examining. It's a different kind of focus on education. In Australia, we care about education, but you also understand that you need to rest in order to go get an education. You need to have other hobbies and interests as a almost like a reward for reading a book. Mm. Oh, you read a book, you finished your maths homework, okay, now we can go outside, now we can. I think when I was growing up at that time, I was never forced to get a good score. Or a good grade. It was only if I did get a good grade, I'd say, oh, look, Dad, I got an A. But it was never, you have a test today, you better get an A. Or you have a test next week, you need to study every day, until it was never that kind of pressure.
We were never really told to know about what is my strengths, what's my interests. Before we took the final exam for college, and then you have to choose which department, which university you are going, and in that short period, it's only which one has more reputation or supposed to be more successful, and the name sounds better for your parents, that kind of thing. Yeah.
In Australia, for example, if you really enjoyed sport in high school, and then people might study sports science or physiotherapy. They wouldn't choose something that's completely opposite to what they personally enjoy in their heart. They have this ability. I think it's their parents are more of a, oh, if it makes you happy, we're happy. You know, if you're going to be able to continue doing what you like, sports therapy or physical therapy or sports science, because you like sport, go ahead.
Cultural difference.
And I think that's been a big influence on me. I never went into my undergraduate studies. After my degree, I never went into marketing. I actually have a marketing background.
I think you mentioned that briefly. It's just very... It cannot really attach to how you are, what you are thinking now to marketing. But marketing is really broad in its way. So do you enjoy it? How is your university like?
There were certain aspects of marketing that I enjoyed, but I think it's the ideology of marketing and what it's associated with that drove me to doing what I'm doing now. So only could I think about sustainability and sustainable development and climate change and these sorts of areas, because I thought, oh, marketing is actually quite a big tool used by businesses to push for consumption. And look what all this consumption is leading us to. And only because I was studying marketing that I could actually reflect on its role. So it was during my last year of my undergraduate, where I was already too long into my degree to stop. But when I realized that I wanted to change my path in a way. So there was a particular afternoon, I think I was sitting in a grassy hill on campus after a lecture, kind of just thinking, what am I doing here? why am I studying marketing? You know, I only chose business because my dad is in business, but he's an accountant. I don't want to do what he does, so let's do marketing. But why am I here? There was a question I asked myself, which was, if money was not an object, like if you just had all the money that you would need, what would you do? Like, what would you do with your time? And that was a very freeing question where I thought, okay, I'd help people in a way, whatever way I could. This is when I started thinking about environmentalism, climate change. It was actually that conversation.
It's only then that you started to think about this.
Only then.
Different idea.
Only then. And from that one question, that one afternoon, I stopped driving. I started
become a vegan.
I became vegan from that. I started to think about social causes. So I went on an Indigenous study tour to a remote Aboriginal community. I interned at a not-for-profit helping kids with autism. And eventually, after I graduated, I was thinking about actually doing a master's in international relations as a way of pursuing
my passion help people.
Yes, to advance action on climate change and sustainable development. So it was sometimes a little afternoon like that or a conversation with yourself can change your life significantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's such an amazing one day transform.
Yeah. And wow. I think is the environment of education, being able to reflect like that and not having to really pursue or use the degree that you have. You know, I wish I'd that thought earlier, but I was supported by it. I was supported by that decision by my family, my friends. Even if my dad is a bit of a skeptic himself, but he still supports what I'm doing because, you know, it makes me happy.
So
there was a bit of a murky middle after I graduated with some family emergency. Extended family emergency. And after that had ended, I actually traveled by myself as a bit of a break. And that was the time I came to Taiwan first for 5 weeks. And then after returning back home, I stayed there for a year and felt that life was not moving in the direction that I wanted it to be. And I'd booked a one-way ticket to Spain. And that ticket is the reason why I came to Taiwan.
Because
COVID caused the flight to be cancelled.
Oh, so you were transferred in Taiwan?
No, so I was still in Australia. I was 30 hours before getting on a plane to Spain.
And?
To travel Europe for 6 to 12 months. I had a one-way ticket. I had quit my job. Canceled. I had left my house. And it was cancelled. I woke up in the morning and it was cancelled. And so I kind of sensed that it was coming because the WHO had declared an emergency. So I thought, okay, let's go outside, let's sit and breathe and think what we're going to do next. And so I got a piece of paper, a pen, and I wrote down one question. which country can I still get into? I've got my bag packed. I still want to go somewhere. I had my British passport that was just sent to me. And so I wrote down the UK and I wrote down Taiwan. Because I saw that Taiwan's border was still open, was handling COVID very well. And it was the second question that led me to Taiwan. Which country will I have a better quality of life?
Which?
Well, I'm here. I was here for 2.5 years.
It's another mental question another that you mental had, question. And then you decided.
The power of reflection. So I went inside, went online, bought a ticket. 7 hours later, I was sitting on a plane going to Taiwan, and I stayed here for 2.5 years.
Had you gone to the UK, would you be living with a relative for a while, or is it just...
I don't know what I would have done. I wouldn't have studied the diploma of sustainable living. I would never have led me to Masters of Sustainability at the University of Sydney. I never would have...
But you already made up your mind to carry on this.
I had made up my mind that I was going to live more sustainably.
Yeah.
But it was only during my time here where I realized that having a personal lifestyle
is not enough.
Like I've done quite a lot to minimize my impact, but it gets to a point where you feel the urge to do more, to affect policy or to help other communities. Mm. And your individual lifestyle, though everyone needs to make some changes and sacrifices, is still not enough.
Mm. Would you like to talk about how you find us? Maybe not the first, the reason why you come to find us, but how's your first impression or the first month's impression of really working with us?
This was something that was very, very unique. It was a lot of first impressions. I think the one that really stuck out to me most was the feeling of being treated like a professional. Like, really, like, respected and being treated like a professional because of the conversations that we've had, just casual conversations. Uh-huh. It didn't feel like I was here to teach English or here to be a student, or it was, okay, he's kind of knows what he's talking about. At least to me it seemed like you. And and it was great to talk about these things with not only someone who's people who are like-minded, but also look into and research the areas that I look into and research. And I can still talk to my classmates to a point, but then if I'm just telling them all about Taiwan's laws and sustainable development, they were like, okay, cool.
What's that
about? But here, it's like, it's an actual discussion. It's not just a, here, this is what's happening in Taiwan, or here, this is what's happening in another country. It's, oh, like, we're able to talk and discuss. And so I felt very welcomed by everyone here and by yourself.
Good to know. We'll have the same feeling. Like, I think... for the first month, well, for this previous month, we were super busy. I think we will always be busy.
Mm-hmm.
But then you seem to be also very intent in work, in your work. So I think for a while, all of us, including you, were like just doing our own things on the same table. We have a shared big table. But every time when we started this particular chatting, it's really like we were actually doing the same thing, all for like small parts, but it's all linked.
Yeah.
So whatever we talk about, it's just hanging there. Like we have a mutual feeling, mutual understanding of things, and mutual, like it's a common passion that we all wanted to do something to fix. Or not to fix, to improve the current situation. And it's so challenging, it's so big. No one individual group or a person can handle it. But together, we might achieve something.
Yeah.
And there are several times when we talk about something, it's there. Like, it won't be solved by our conversation, but it will give us more idea of how we can deal with it and things like that. It's very inspiring.
Mm. Yeah. I think this is it's almost like a support network in a way. Mm. Like, you cannot continue with your work or be motivated to do your work unless you know that other people are doing the same thing or feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And so when you do have these conversations, whether it's at the table or if it's at a conference when you're meeting people, you go, oh, actually, they are working hard and they also feel tired. But that mutual understanding is like, okay, tomorrow I'm gonna keep working.
Yeah. At first I felt a little bit sorry for dragging you into this muddy water. But yeah,
I was already in.
Because you have this really interesting starting point. Well, he and James send us an invitation to be part to do the partnership, to be a partner in our organization and deal with whatever my organization think is important or works in. And I was like, wow, so how if I said yes, what kind of topic I could put to him that would also benefit to him? And I decided that's EIA in Taiwan. Our EIA is so different because I was trained as an ecologist in the UK and came back to Taiwan and was like, what the hell? This is ridiculous. When I was an ecologist working in Taiwanese company, I was doing this all the time, like in this kind of 9 p.m.-ish sometimes, and working with many other colleagues and everyone. classmates, very close, and complaining about the government. And it was always complaining about the law and the situation. And they were like, accept it, you are Taiwanese, and you cannot bring in British or any Western kind of system to Taiwan. This is how we run things. And if you bring something new that people, so new that people cannot recognize, they cannot really appreciate the value of it. So that really drives me mad sometimes. Because you know, there are good ways to deal with similar situation.
Do you think that challenge, it drives you, or is it more of a motivator for you to think, I can be a part of this change here? Or do you feel sometimes, this is too hard?
Both ways. That makes me have to maybe subconsciously have to change works sometimes in order to keep up my passion. It's not, I don't want to be just for the sake of continuing the work to accept the situation as it is
mm-hmm.
and get experience. By getting experience, more accepting of how things are supposed to be done in Taiwan. I refuse to be like that. And that might leads me to be needing to move to a new position to look for other opportunity to find ways to break through that kind of entangled situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
So your initial thought was to set me on EIA. I was also curious what your first impression of that email was. Because writing it was quite
it's difficult. Such a long letter.
It was a long letter. It was quite a long letter, but I wanted it to be detailed to show that I did have some understanding. Detailed, but also an understanding of a lot of Taiwan's sustainability challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Quite varied works that I've done, but also the benefits of potentially this collaboration. I was just curious when you saw this long email.
I was, as I mentioned earlier, I in our interview, I was worried mostly for not having enough time to collaborate, really collaborate. I was afraid we will be so busy that you will be here like lost in this Taiwanese world, and not really satisfying about your project. I understand how important that kind of project is for you, so it's a main thing. But I would also be glad, of course, to have someone from the outside and look into our regulation systems and to give us some fresh light, and that's something I would really appreciate. So when balancing this and that, this potential opportunity, I was asking our chair, Jia Wei, about this potential students wanting to come to our organization, and suddenly we secretly feel like, why are we so famous? At that time in June, we were having another American intern who's also, we didn't really send out any advertisement, and another one came. So we were secretly surprised and not knowing really how to do, but it's a happy surprise. So I asked my chair, there's an invitation coming, and what do you suggest? And he was like, rejected. You don't have time.
We don't have time. Yeah,
it's just he's not asking any detail, anything. He's like, no, you won't have time. Just reject it. But I couldn't because I already received your long letter. So I know you really put heart into trying to get an. The organization you want to work with. So I said to myself, maybe I at least can have an online interview with you. The thing is, I was so busy at that time, I can only do it on the weekends.
Yeah.
And it was a mess for me, because I just finished something in Tainan.
Yes,
it was so,
cafe.
Yeah. Already forgotten. I was so tired. So I didn't really wake up as I was supposed, like at least an hour earlier. And so yeah, it went smoothly, but for me, for my part, I feel a little bit sorry that I couldn't really arrange for a good environment to do the online meeting. Yeah, but the online meeting for me really triggered me a lot. I think we had really interesting talk that time. Did we have a second one?
We did have a follow-up. So the first one was just in checking that I was a real
person. For your side as well.
Yeah, and then I could sense that you were quite busy, so we did schedule a follow-up. Then we were back in the office.
I was still unsure of how this is going to be like.
He was also just confirming details. In my email, I tried to stress it in the call, is that like it is just, it's not an internship. I'm not here to learn what you do. I'm here to do something for you. It's a very independent process.
It's a very rare kind of invitation.
Yeah.
That I ever got.
That was why I was a little concerned, because the school always said, use our name. Our name is a very powerful brand. Organizations would love to be able to have a piece of research done for them. But then it's also quite strange to get an email from someone from a different country saying they've done so much research on on sustainability challenges. They're from this university and they really want to do some research for you.
Yeah.
It could be quite daunting, you know.
Yeah.
I did want to have a look of who and what kind of person you are. Yeah. But I wasn't so sure after our first interview. I was like, I think you guaranteed you'll be here in Taiwan the whole time. But you won't be coming into the office. Meaning that you won't be bothering us. I was like, so how are you really going to work together? And yeah, just still a lot of questions going on. So anyway, it ended up quite smoothly well.
we were also initially talking, our initial idea was around benefit sharing. So I think that the hardest thing...
Did we?
Yeah, we did. I think the hardest thing to work out, you had concerns about time restrictions and how much time you'd have available.
Yeah.
On my side, it was working out a project that would actually be useful for you.
Uh-huh.
Because I think my initial proposal was quite... even though it's quite detailed and long, I didn't actually propose a project for
that's
you.
That's right.
And so it could be quite...
what it's a long letter with an open end.
Very open end. Like, what do you want me to do for you? And that was... it was more of a... even though I can read... even though I can read your website, I don't know what you're working on.
I don't know what...
Because that's the same
but it's everyone. Understandable because we had this website on after our first year of work.
Year.
And it's less than a year for Jingxuan to be in this team. And so before he came in, this team was very lonely. Mm. And so we were looking for our path. And but realizing that we already have to put a website to make sure everyone knows we are for real. There's an official website. So what we put back then, like almost 2 years ago, wasn't really what we are doing now. And we are so busy, we don't have time to
okay. Yeah. And also in general, every organization, what they have on their website is different to what they're working on now. And I didn't want to propose something because then if you see a project proposed and you think that's not what we do, reject, we don't want them. And so I was like, okay, if we are able to have a discussion and talk, and I think I left that first discussion around like benefit sharing and possibility around here, I thought, I don't know much about benefit sharing, but it could be quite interesting.
All right.
But then when you came back to me with this on the second follow up, you kind of just said, EIA. there's no mention of benefit sharing again. It was just, you'd set me off to like, see what you think about benefit sharing and what could possibly be there. And the next meeting,
oh my God.
It was just, so what did you think? I said, I think this, and then after 1 minute you just said, so EIA is not a requirement for solar in Taiwan.
I thought I put both options for you at the first place.
In the first one, there was no mention of EIA. I think there was
so funny.
Something around solar, but never EIA.
Okay.
And then when you said that there was no EIA for solar developments in Taiwan, I don't know if you could see it, my jaw dropped. Like, I just... considering in Australia,
God,
everything
so
requires EIA. Solar doesn't require
so
EIA.
So does that make you interested?
Made me very interested.
Then I realized. For our first interview, that's when I was looking through this benefit sharing with Yi Jing the other day, the other girl, and... We bump into a lot of Australian document about benefit sharing. So I put it up. But what's in deep in my heart was EIA and things like that, because that's a fundamental thing that we were in lack of. And it's a constant struggle. Not having EIA has some space to act on, but then it's very dangerous water that there's no support, no nothing, and no previous experience to really follow. And so the most dangerous thing for a lot of us was if next year the presidential election changed parties, all this unwritten system would be like abolished.
Yeah.
Sometimes even written things would be changed, so this kind of things would definitely be changed. So. Yeah, there's a huge anxious behind.
A limbo, not sure where it's...
Yeah. So, and I was thinking about that as early as last year. almost thinking with trying to have a collaboration with other professors to do this research. So I already have some idea of how this research should be done and how we should cover things. That's why I just put it forward when I decided this is a lot better and more urgent than benefit sharing.
Yeah.
If you are really seriously considering to come to Taiwan and join our team. Yeah.
And it's been quite interesting because a lot of what I tend to write about is energy in Taiwan. And I'd never, despite reading so much about it and writing so much about it, I'd never come across the
things that I mentioned.
The things that you had mentioned. And I thought it was quite the purpose of my project, the idea of this project should be that, yes, you are doing something for another organization, but make sure it's something you're interested in and something that you can learn as well as give. So I thought, okay, I know a lot about energy in Taiwan, but I can still learn a little bit here about this EIA process and how it doesn't apply. And so it really, it triggered something in me of curiosity that time.
Cool.
Yeah.
For the first episode, the main thing is to introduce to whoever audience, the audience, that we are going to have a new series that we want to talk and share about the experience we have in working in sustainable and in renewable energy in Taiwan. Why is it so difficult and how does it compare to other countries like Australia or Western or European countries? And there are so many things that we normally talk and got interested about. But when it comes back to our real work, it's just tools out, like the tools available are suddenly like so limited, and yeah, it drives us crazy. So with James on board for the next few months, we hope we can continue this kind of dialogue, this conversation, and maybe share with your audience as well of how we can learn throughout this path. You have a final words for our potential dear audience?
Yeah, it's exciting to see how my research is going to unfold and how our big table discussions kind of influence some of the things that we talk about going forward.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a challenge, but it's exciting. I think there's a lot to talk about.
True. Yeah. So be sure to stay tuned on to our podcast. What's that? Program? Yeah, we'll make sure we refresh it at least every week. Okay, so see you then.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.